The wrath of God has devastated Egypt, unleashing terrible plagues against Pharaoh and his kingdom. Will Pharaoh's hardened heart finally crack? Will Moses deliver his people? Will Adam be able to time out this intro so that the music swells correctly? We find out on today's episode of Reading Events. Everybody, welcome back to Reading Heathens, the unholy and wholly uninformed Bible study podcast. I'm your host, Adam B., here with your other host, Daniel T. How you doing, Daniel?
Doing great. I was trying to do the, that's like the from Price is Right, when he's like, come on down.
Talking Bob Barker or Drew Carey?
Well, no, it's not Bob Drew Barker Carey. Or Drew Carey.
It's the audio guy, yeah.
Yeah, the fella.
Yeah.
The fella.
Oh.
Yeah.
The godmite.
What's his name?
He's dead, I think, but I forgot. I don't remember his name either.
Aw. Unsung hero. Guy,
but I'm doing great. How are you doing, Adam?
Well.
You feeling better yet?
No, Daniel. I still pretty much hate everything. I'm in a whirlwind of anxiety all the time. You know, especially about someone in my life finding this podcast. But Daniel, we have our friend Geneva back with us today. What's
Hi.
Up, Geneva?
Not much. Glad to be back.
Well, last week we read about, what did we read about, guys? I forgot. And it wasn't last
Passover.
Week, it was last episode.
Lambs died, and some rules were laid down about yeast and whatnot.
Yep.
It
was a celebration of getting out of Egypt. They're going to mark it on their heads, or they're going to kill a lamb, and they're going to remember.
Geneva, sometimes we ask, if you're willing to talk about it, if you have experience with the fine Bible, our fantastic book, did you grow up reading the Bible? Did you grow up going to a church or a temple? Or
I did, yeah. So I grew up in a very religious family, a kind of weird religious family, almost a little bit cultish. We bounced around from a lot of different churches because my dad grew up Southern Baptist. My mom grew up in LA as like a godless heathen. And then they met up and she converted and they got real serious about like populating this earth per the Jesus God order. And they had 7 kids and did a lot of like homeschooling, a lot of home churching for a while.
Whoa.
My dad was just like never pleased with like any churches like set up. He was always kind of like, I don't know, a little holier than thou about every, he'd be like, oh, they're not like hardcore enough. My dad was like, is what you would describe as like a fundamentalist Christian, like a reconstructionist kind of guy. He's like, burn it all down. Biblical law is the thing. To anybody listening to this, you're probably like, oh my God, that's super scary. It's as scary as it sounds, for sure. It's a very weird space to be. But yeah, I definitely grew up religious. The longest church that I went to in all that time was a Baptist church. A lot of nice people that went there. But yeah, that was basically my upbringing, was like a very weird sort of thing. My parents were like so anti non-denominational, or like what they would call like not hardcore enough Christianity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they wanted us to sit still, fucking listen, and like no like coffee to like entertain us or bait us. There was like no fun thing about church. Like this is like work. So
I can relate to that a little bit.
Yeah.
Growing up, I was always confused. Like, hey guys, have you read this? It seems like we should not be working normal jobs and living in houses. I was always like,
yeah.
Are we supposed to be like only serving God. It's pretty explicit about this.
Or the money thing. Yeah, that's what I, till this day, I'm like one of those people who like take, you know, it's hard to unlearn all of the stuff. Like I would say that like so much of that Christian upbringing is like so fundamental to like who I am now. It's just, it has a different spin, right? Like I feel like I have a strong moral code that I got like the idea of from Christianity, but certainly not like the specifics of from my personal moral code now.
Yeah.
But yeah, things like money, to this day, I'm like, it's the root of all evil. You cannot tell me you're a Christian and like also a millionaire. To me, that doesn't make any sense. I'm like, it just does it. Like you should be giving all your money away.
Yeah.
And so, and now, like, my parents are divorced now. When they were married, it was a lot more, like, long hair, long dresses, weird-ass shit. But now my mom is a Eastern Orthodox, which I kind of dig, because it's more, like, about the personal relationship, and it's very ceremonial, like, what you would, like, kind of be reminiscent in a Catholic mass sort of situation. A lot of like standing, kneeling, chanting kind of thing. And I've always dug that. I mean, it's like, if you're going to do it, if you're going to be religious, you might as well like make it a big deal. I kind of really hate going to non-denominational churches. Sorry if you love your non-denominational church, but it just seems like just like a social thing. Like it doesn't seem like it's a real practice in your moral, I don't know.
When you say non-denominational, do you have a specific, because what comes to my mind, at least what and also what bothered me were the non-denominational kind of new age churches with like hands in the air and open guitar chords like stuff.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm imagining too. Kind of like I'm a name drop one, New Life, like one of that kind of vibe where it's, you know, it's more like a display of social status than it really is like a community of like real Christian followers. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what their lives are like, but that's what it appears from the outside.
It's just a lot of money. Having a pastor who was like, hey guys, don't worry. I'm really cool. I know what it's like to be cool. I am cool. I'm real, real cool. I'm also a Christian. Yeah. Mostly I'm fucking sick, bro. Listen, you can be fucking then, cool too. And like God.
Well,
it's possible.
It always, I guess some of those churches, and I don't know if the one we're speaking about is exactly like this, but some of those like cool churches, like cool things are happening. They seem to take a quick turn towards that, like a church that's like really big and like super nice and like seems to have a lot of money and the pastor seems to be making a lot of money. And it just seems to be like people are making a lot of money off of this like operation. You know, so like because it has kind of a cool like sales pitch to it. Like, come to this non-denominational church and it's about, you know, it can be about anything. We don't have any, seems like we don't have any rules at all. And like, and it's like, we got some jeans and we still put gel in our hair and like, you know, like that kind of thing. And, it's like, also bring that pocketbook because there's going to be some merch and there's going to be some like mugs to buy and like things like that.
It totally is about money. I mean, you think about it, you guys know, like in the South, it's like your church is the biggest point of community. So like, you know, you're looking for a dentist. Well, you know, Joe Bob or whatever is a dentist and he goes to church with you. You're like looking for a banker or whatever. So it's this real, I mean, and it's not like it shouldn't work that way. Communities work that way. But like, what's the weird part is that it's like when you start getting just a lot of rich people together and there's like not a lot of middle class or lower class people and it's just like all this money. And then you think about the amount of property that those churches own and the fact that they're not paying any property taxes on those giant ass like collegiate looking campuses that they have. And it's like, I'm sitting over here being like, there's 15 potholes like on my street and like, you know, and this church is not paying any property tax. It's like, it makes me mad, you know, it's like, at least you could be serious about your God if you're going to have all of this fucking space, you know what I mean? You could like suffer just a tiny bit because you're having to go to church every Sunday. You know what I mean? Like you could be mad about it a tiny bit, or at least, I don't know.
That is, I think that's an especially relevant point about, you know, like church is a point of community. And that's something when I feel like the church seems to be dying, like people are more secular. And I think one of the big things that will be missed out on is there were a lot of old poor people who went to my church. And when they were sick or like something went wrong, their community was a church. And that like there was almost an obligation for the church to help those people out.
And yeah. as people are just more often old and don't have children, like I'm not going to have children. I'm not going to go to church. So I intend to like die alone, pressing my life alert like button is what will happen. But I don't feel like New Age churches that are only 20 somethings necessarily build the same community relationship.
Well, the fact that you could go to a church and not know everybody there is like a very like it's a foreign idea mm-hmm. to me. You know, that my idea of a church is like what you're saying. It's this idea of like every you do things with these people, your kids are growing up together. It's this group of people that know each other intimately and deeply and support each other, and that's amazing. But the bigger these churches, like conglomerates or whatever they get, it's like, it's not that anymore. You don't know all the people that go to church if there are like thousands of members. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, it's losing kind of that touch, but hopefully you won't have to die alone with your life alert. Maybe we'll find some new ways to like get people together in community, like online communities. That's like a step in that neighborhood associations.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, like things like that are also ways that you can do that kind of community. I sort of hate the idea that you can't have a community without church, especially here in the South that is like such a thing. People will be like, oh, it's so nice to meet you. Where do you go to church at? And I'm like, oh, I don't go to church. And their faces are like, I just thought we had to go to church to be able to do anything. And it's like, no, you don't have to do that. And, I've thought about going. Oh, sorry.
Well, sorry to interrupt, but, it's really tough to create that almost responsibility to have to go. Because I was thinking about this last night, and in the past, you know, sometimes I'll do the a long stream where I'll just play our podcast and, you know, to try to get people to come listen, you know, catch a few, you know, little fish out in the water. But and we bring up on this podcast a lot, actually, if you listen to it, like, oh, we just, Adam and I are like, oh, last night we hung out with our buddies, or oh, last night we did this. And I think for like a Los Angeles group of friends, we actually see each other more than a lot of other people do, or get together in large groups. And it's still mm-hmm. only maybe once or twice a month. But if you were going to a church, we would feel obligated to be around each other maybe twice a week, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's tough to create that feeling of responsibility, because if we tried to do that, like Adam and I tried to hang out twice a week, we would find excuses twice a week to not hang out with each other.
And the few times we did hang out, we would not be sober because we can't stand each other's company.
I hear that. Yeah, it's tough, and like I feel like we become so like autonomous like in modern culture, you know? So like when the times when you need that community is like when you are like a new parent, or like you're sick. Or like, you know what I mean? Like if you're doing fine, like you're sort of like, I don't need to like go see anybody, but there's nothing that like needs to be fed, I don't think, at that point. Although I'm very social, and so I don't ever understand like people who don't like to be, I mean, I do understand people who don't like to be other people, but that's not me, you know? And so I try to find community all the time. I get a kick out of just that kind of thing. But yeah, no, it's definitely, it's a different changing thing for sure.
I understand there are other outlets for community. Still plan on that life alert. This is the closest human contact.
That is what it's for. Yeah.
Well, Adam, if I really thought that I would live longer than you, I would say I'd be there for you. But I don't. I mean, I don't think we can. I don't think that we can be sure of that. You're a lot healthier than I am. Seems like you're probably are not going to have a heart condition like I will most likely.
But is he managing his stress well?
Well, you know, there is that. There is that. That stress will fill up those arteries just like a hamburger.
Does drinking two fake sugar energy drinks a day to change my depression into anxiety count as taking care of myself? mitigating stress? Guys, we got to get into the Bible, because I mentioned before we started recording, I really have to use the restroom. And I'm counting on that energy to keep me peppy and host-like. Mm-hmm. So we got to get into Exodus 14. The Israelites have left Egypt, Moses at the helm, God leading them in a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire at night, the long way around. So that's where we are. They're journeying. And I'm just going to read. There's no title here because it was in the last chapter. Something about a sea. Exodus 14. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi Hatheron between Migdol and the sea. They are to encamp by the sea directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord." So the Israelites did this. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, "What have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services." So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots, along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi-Hahitheron, opposite Baal Zephon. I love that. I love that it's like he took 600 of his best chariots and also all the chariots. took...
So you just took all the chariots.
Yeah.
Come on. Who taught this guy how to write?
And this is, I believe, isn't this being written by Moses?
That's what, I mean, that's just what people are to assume. Like, you know, is that Moses is recounting the goings on, whatnot. I do like the Lord finally, he just laid it out flat out. He's like, "I'm going to do this. And because I did this, everybody's going to think I'm real cool."
Mm-hmm. Not like he is not circling around it. He is being direct. This is about being cool. This is about winning over the cool points.
And up until this point, everyone in the we've been calling it an administration. I don't know what how Egyptian, you know, hierarchy works, but everyone except Pharaoh has been like, "Hey Pharaoh, this God guy is kind of scary. Maybe you should let him go." And Pharaoh's been like, "Nah." And now everyone's got some remorse. They're like, "Wait a second, we used
to
have
how much work they're
going to
have to do."
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, "Oh shit, I'm about to have to work my ass off to build those pyramids. No.
I think we can deal with another wind or deal with God sucking the life out of our children again. We got to get
some they're like, "I can, yeah, exactly."
I don't know much about the Egyptian way of life, however many years ago this was, but I think we are to assume that they're living much better than the rest of these tribes that are kind of out in the desert. At least in DreamWorks, mm-hmm. the Prince of Egypt seems like they had a pretty cool gig.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They seemed like fine. They're all like very handsome. They got those sweet like little like robes and their bellies are all showing.
Chiseled jaws.
Yeah,
they look good.
Eyeliner.
They're in great shape. Mm-hmm. Looking good.
I'm going to pick up with verse 10. "As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, 'Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert.'" Dang,
Jesus.
That's a hearty rebuke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, for as many plagues as the Lord has thrown down on Egypt, you would think these people would have some respect by now. And
perspective, maybe.
Like, there's a literal pillar of fire guiding us through the desert at night.
But that's why, like, when you were talking that last chapter, when it was like, he like was like, "Well, we're going to go around the whole war situation because these people are unconvinced." Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. They have not yet seen the waters part. They do
like,
not
where
know.
Where is our yeast?
Yeah.
We need some yeast.
This guy's driving a hard bargain over here. At least the Egyptians gave us yeast.
This is verse 13. Actually, one second. Let me just look at the King James version of verse 11. No, it's exactly the same. It's like, what, were there not enough graves in Egypt? Which is a pretty badass line. Like, I can see that. That's a good tweet right now. Like,
snarky, for sure.
verse 13, Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." Then the Lord said,
"That's a weird line."
What's that?
Oh, sorry. It's a weird line to me when I was reading it earlier. It's like the whole being still thing. It's, it goes so like anti the idea of like what I always think of when I think of like the relationship with God. There's like a very active thing that needs to be going on. But this is like, he's like, no, I got this. I'm going to take care of it all. And it's like, oh, okay. Sit back and watch. Which is not my interpretation of like what God is calling upon his people to do, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that philosophy, you know, morphs mm-hmm. later in the Bible. But right now, mm-hmm. aside from the law, really the main thing it's required to be a child of God has been circumcision up to this point. There hasn't been a lot of law or really, you know, there hasn't even been church as far as I can tell. God mostly mm-hmm. only speaks to prophets mm-hmm. and is like, good luck leading your people.
Yeah, it definitely isn't like I don't want to say organized, but there's not a whole lot of structure.
Yeah.
Except they did talk about doing some sacrifices and whatnot at some certain points, but nothing like real clear.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I'm going to pick up with verse 15 because I have to pee. The Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them, and I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved in front and stood behind them. The coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel, or coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel, throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to the one side and light to the other, so neither went near the other all night long. It's pretty rad imagery.
Yeah.
The Prince of Egypt just totally ignores this and slots in a fire tornado that acts as a barrier briefly.
That was sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty rad, cinematic. But this is a much more, this is a slow game.
Yeah.
This is just, you know, it's kind of a different imagery altogether of darkness and fire.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that there's an angel of God and a pillar of cloud. It's like God's there, but he also has like a small enforcer, walking around.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first mention of it since like before when he said that they had the cloud and the fire, right? Like mm-hmm. he didn't say it was an angel.
I remember cool. One thing Dad did that, you know, kept me thinking and I still think it's pretty cool. But he's like, if you look at angels in the Bible, they're not pretty. They're like scary warriors. Like angels are to be viewed as terrifying. Like,
yeah.
Although if you're living, you know, 3,000 years ago, the perfect image of a like human being, a beautiful human being, might be terrifying. You're like,
yeah,
his teeth are clean.
Clean.
All right, I'm going to pick up with verse 21. Then Moses stretched his hand out over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and the cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He jammed the wheels of their chariots so they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak, the sea went back into its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. The
Damn.
End. That's it. That's how you start a movement. You split a sea wide open and murder an entire army. Yeah. Now you're a god. Now you got clout.
You got respect now.
That's how you do it.
I didn't realize how long it took God me to part the sea, you know? Like where he was talking about bringing the wind in.
Yeah.
Where does that say? Yeah. Like I always imagined it, thanks, you know, Prince of Egypt, of a big, like a real instantaneous kind of thing. It just happened. He was like, nah, even God took a second, you know? Yeah. Like he had to get that wind and he had to part that sea.
He uses a logical way of parting the sea, which is very slowly with a strong wind over an entire night. It reminds me of, I've mentioned it before, but there was a National Geographic special I watched that was really bad, but it was like, here's what maybe scientifically happened when the Israelites were fleeing Egypt. And I remember them trying, they were like, went to a part of a different river and they were like, this part's really thin. If you blew this hard enough, it might part a little bit. It'd still be muddy down there.
Did you guys ever remember like going out to a lake and maybe the water receded a little bit? Maybe it was a bit of a drought or something. And you would walk out into the water that was really far out and it was like very muddy. It was like different than just walking around in like a shallow end of a lake. Mm-hmm. It was very, very. I'd imagine like that's what it was like walking across the like parted Red Sea. I don't know.
You imagine it being like really muddy.
Yeah, muddy. Like, how do you get a chariot through there?
Well, in the King James version, God distributes goulashes to all the Israelites.
Everybody just walk around in high waisted duck hunting wear.
Perfectly sized for every individual Israelite. They've got their names monogrammed on them.
The Israelites still complain because they didn't fit correctly.
It's tough not to think of the Israelites as being like a complaining bunch because it's like even when he's talking, like at the end here, it's like they put their trust in him and Moses as his servant. It's like dot, dot, dot for now. Like there are so many more instances coming up when like that faith gets tested. And you'd think that these people would just like remember, I don't know. I'm not trying to dig on the Israelites, you know, but.
Yeah, it's a little incongruous with, you know, the power that is displayed in the Bible matched with people still being like, yeah, I don't know.
No. Not quite convinced.
I mean, I know literally all the water in the whole kingdom was turned into blood and
right
fire rained from the sky. But well, this is a big deal, guys. This is the end. I'm gonna create a new cover image for the podcast. This is the end of I'm gonna call it Fleeing Egypt.
Yeah. This is the end of the fleeing. Now we're going to get to the walking.
That's right. They've done fled. And did you guys love this story when you were growing up? Like, were there like big Bible stories that were like the number ones? This one was big for me because I loved thinking about like seeing the whales and like, you know, like when it parted and stuff, you know, like the imagery of it. And even yes. like it's thinking about it now, thinking about how I felt about the Egyptians, I was like, fuck those guys. Those guys suck. I can't wait for them to die in all that water. And like now I would read when we're hearing it now, I'm like feel really bad for the Egyptians. Like
they had
know.
Their hearts hardened and not one of them survived.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, oh,
I was
shit.
Like most of them probably didn't want to go. They're like, I didn't even want to right. do this today. I'm like, I could have done some other Egyptian stuff.
That's why I get so confused when Christians use stuff from the Old Testament like this to justify war and, mm-hmm. you know, other causes. And it's like, dude, the whole thing that makes you a Christian is that this other dude showed up and was like, hey, I got a new wave here. We're going to yeah. take care of the poor and yeah. we're going to be meek and not deal in violence. If we can help it. this mentality of God still seems to be big in Christianity as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about just like them being enslaved too and like having compassion for like people, you know, like in the current like immigration situation that the United States is always talking about where it's like, you know, people are in bad situations and it's like, oh yeah. And it's like, you would want to get out of that situation and yeah. you want to like understand, you know what I mean? Like where you're being oppressed, like that oppression is a big narrative in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. Like, it's like, you're going to be a Christian and people are going to oppress you unless you live in the United States, I guess. Yeah. Like God didn't know about that. He wasn't aware that like the US of A was coming where you could be like top dog. But you got
to
be a Christian.
You guys go to the Church of Latter-day Saints if you're into this holy America. I'm looking forward to the second coming of Moses where someone walks up to Trump's wall and parts it like an accordion. It's going to be sick. And then he slams it back shut on smashes people.
It's going to be good.
Well, what would you rate this on a scale of 1 to 5 selected chariots? Or, 1 to 5 premium
really good
chariots.
Well, I have an announcement. I love this one. So I'm going to give I'm going to give out my very first 5 out of 5 chariots.
Whoa!
That gives my very first.
That's a big deal, Daniel.
Yeah.
Daniel, I'm really glad he did that. I think, you know, this is a marquee Bible story here. I think one of the biggest images you can remember from the Old Testament is Moses standing there with the sea parted and his hand outstretched. But because I don't want to totally agree with you, I'm going to give it 4.9. And that 0.1 that's left out, that's in honor of all the dead Egyptians on the shore. Feel bad for them.
Yeah.
So.
R.I.P. Yeah, I got to give this one a 5. It's one of my favorites. I mean, just in the fact that I can remember it is pretty big. I haven't yet forgotten what has happened in this chapter. You know, I really dig the water. I love a good beach. I'm curious about it being a Red Sea, all that good stuff. Just think there's a lot of fun stuff in here. So 5 exceptional chariots for me.
Hell, winner.
Yeah. Well, Geneva, thank you so much for joining us for our finale of the fleeing of Egypt. Do you have anything you'd like to plug here?
Thank you guys for having me. This is super fun. No, just, yeah, follow my Instagram again, you know, Geneva_the_diva. Check me out, become my friend, that kind of stuff.
Well, hell yeah.
Please do that, y'all. We want Geneva to have that big heathens bump. You can find us, all of our socials are at HostedPod. We're on Instagram, we're on Twitch, we have a Gmail, hostedpod@gmail.com. And, you know, send us an email if you have a complaint. That's valid. Appreciate everybody listening. We're seeing those numbers skyrocket, Daniel.
Yeah, going straight up.
No doubt. In large part, two wonderful guests like Geneva. Everyone play it safe out there. If the coronavirus is still a thing when this airs, you know, wash those hands all the time. And you know what? Here's my suggestion. This is something I'm pitching. While you're at it, pretend you can prevent the coronavirus by flossing those chompers. Now's a good time to get in the habit. It's a hard habit to build. Just keep that virus out your teeth.
We should do more PSAs like that. Let me see.
Yeah, we're the authorities on both
good
hygiene
dental hygiene.
And,
well, I'm going to throw it in there. You know what? Also, guys out there, you can turn right on red in most intersections. When it's a solid green and you're turning left, go ahead, pull out halfway into that intersection so the next person might be able to also turn left. You know, things like that. Be a good citizen.
Yeah, it's important.
All right, y'all. Well, thanks again, Geneva. And bye until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.